I've never been a big volume guy when it comes to training. I believe more in being consistent and also having a clear purpose of every session.
The Triathlon Show 145. Hey, what's up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of That Triathlon Show, the podcast presented by scientifictriathlon.com. I'm your host, Michael, and on today's episode, we have another age group case study. I interview Carl Brummer, who is a 49-year-old age group athlete from Sweden. And he is fast. In fact, he is super fast, with many sub-9-hour Ironman races and age group victories in big Ironman races under his belt. And he does this on a training volume that on average typically has been 10 hours or even well below 10 hours per week. So that is pretty amazing. And we talk about how he has achieved such great results on this training volume and what his approach has been to that. But first, big thank you to our sponsors. Precision Hydration provide electrolytes so that you can stay hydrated, get hydrated, and keep yourself performing even if races are long and races are hot. They help you by providing a free online sweat test that is a simple quiz that you can take in a few minutes' time on their website. You can check that out. I'll link to it in the episode description, and that will give you a personalized hydration strategy for your next race. And we have 5 days to go for the August promo, where you can get 20% off your entire order on precisionhydration.com. And you can get those 20% discounts by using the promo code TTS20. And big thanks to Roka, that is the world's premium triathlon apparel brand. You can find them on roka.com. Roka's wetsuits are super fast. You can basically buy an entry-level Roka wetsuit, and its performance will be similar to most other brands' high-end wetsuits. They have incredible technology in all of their products, and I talked about the arm sub technology in their wetsuits before, but it's just so amazing to me how flexible the Roka wetsuits feel in their shoulders, so I want to mention it once again. Roka figured out that why use the standard wetsuit design where the arms are kind of in a t-shirt shape, hanging down by your sides, when you are actually supposed to be swimming with at least one arm extended at a time. So they completely turned the arms on their head, so to say, and use their so-called arms up technology. And this helps provide super flexibility in your shoulder, and you'll feel as if you're swimming without a wetsuit in terms of your flexibility and lack of constriction that you may have with other wetsuits, but definitely with a wetsuit in terms of the flotation and the glide and the extra speed that the wetsuit provides you. And whether it's a wetsuit or a trisuit or a swimskin or anything else from Roka that you're looking for, you can use the promo code THATTRIATHLONSHOW, all one word, all caps, to get 20% off your entire order on roka.com. For those of you who are eagerly awaiting the results from the giveaway that I've been running, it is now, by the time you hear this, finished. But I record this episode while it's still running. So I'll announce the winners on next week's podcast, I think. But if you hear this as it comes out, you'll probably, and if you are on the Scientific Triathlon newsletter, you'll probably get an email today or tomorrow where I announce the winners earlier. So stay tuned for that. But if you're just listening to the podcast, you will hear it next week. All right, so a little bit more about Carl, my guest today. He has several sub-9-hour Ironman races to his name. Among other merits, he was first in his age group in Ironman Frankfurt in 2013, and that year he was also fourth in Kona, making him the second fastest Swede ever at that time. I think Patrick Nielsen has beaten him since then, but he did this, the second fastest Swede ever in Kona as an age grouper. And low volume, to give you an example, last year on an average weekly training volume of 6 to 8 hours per week, he did his fastest ever Ironman time with 8:52 in Ironman Kalmar in Sweden. He turns 50 this year, and he has a new goal, and he has raised his training volume to an incredible 10 to 12 hours per week this year for that. That goal is the Podium Tour 2018, so he wants to finish on the podium in Ironman South Africa, the Ironman 70.3 in Elsinore, or Helsingør, as we say in Scandinavian, in Denmark, and in the ITU Long Distance World Championships, also in Denmark, and in the 70.3 World Championships in South Africa and in Kona. He has done three of those races. The 70.3 South Africa still remains, as does Kona. South Africa may be finished by the time that you hear this podcast, actually. But he finished first in Ironman South Africa, first in the 70.3 Elsinore, and second in the ITU Long Distance World Championships. So these are incredible results, and let's hope it keeps rolling. I'm incredibly excited to bring you this interview. I think it will be one of the all-time top episodes on this podcast, to be honest. So let's just jump in. Today's guest on that triathlon show is Carl Brummer from Sweden. So Carl, or should I say Kalle, welcome to that triathlon show.
Thank you very much, Michael. You can say whatever you want to. Happy to be on your show.
So this is another one in the series of age group case studies, and you are a very interesting one. We'll get into that in just a little bit. But first, a brief background about yourself, your career, your family, and where you live and come from, etc.
Okay, yeah. So, I've got a wife, so one wife and two daughters, and we have been married for 25 years next year, so we've been together for quite a while. And I work as a consultant. I've got my own business, I work with people and team development and organizational culture to help people, individuals, and teams to perform better, I would say, yeah, for short.
And how old are you?
I'm not yet 50, but in a couple of weeks I will be. So on the 25th of August, I will turn 50.
Congratulations. Mm-hmm. You might just have turned 50 by the time this episode is released.
Yeah, true. That could be very well. So, yeah, of course.
So when and how did you get into triathlon?
Yeah, that's actually quite a while ago. It was in the beginning of the 80s. I grew up in a little village in southern Sweden, a fishing village, only a little harbor and 50 houses. And one of the dads had heard of Ironman Hawaii. So, and then he came up with the idea that we should make an own Ironman in Vikeg. So a micro Ironman, I would call it. So we got together and ran around the village, biked to the next village and back, and then jumped in the harbor and swam around it. That was, I think, about 1983, as I said. And I enjoyed it. And then every year we did that once every summer. And then in the late 80s, a couple of other guys came with fancy bikes. And when I did beat them as well, they asked me if I wanted to join them because they were starting up a triathlon club in Lund, Malmö. So then I started training, actually. More structured.
So you hadn't been training really at all for those Ironmans that you did?
No, I didn't do Ironman then. I only made, the short ones in Vikeg, but that was, I mean, the run, the swim was a couple of hundred meters, the bike was about 8 kilometers and maybe 3 to 4 kilometers of running, so it was really short. And my sports background is more of the Boy Scouts and windsurfing, I would say.
Okay, yeah. Well, but that makes more sense, because doing an Ironman off the cuff like that, or Iron Distance, that would
very impressive. No. We weren't even close to it. So I stayed with the shorter distances during the 90s. So I raced Olympic distance primarily until 1997, when we became parents. We got our first daughter. So my last race in sort of part one of my triathlon career was in August 1997, where I did the Swedish Championships over the Olympic distance. And then I quit with triathlon. I couldn't handle being a parent with a young daughter, having my career, and also trying to develop myself as a triathlete. So I simply put the bike away and focused on work and family instead.
And what level did you reach at that time?
I finished sixth in the Swedish championship that year in 97.
That's the elite category, not age group.
That's the elite category. And the year before, I think I was sixth in the Swedish Cup in the elite category. So I was decent. Still, I mean, we didn't have any coach or something like that, but I was training for fun and was doing good results, I would say.
Mm-hmm. And how much did you train at that time?
To be honest, I don't know. I mean, we had pool sessions at twice or three times a week, and then we would go for a longer bike ride on the weekends and maybe run twice a week.
So not that much.
No, it wasn't that much, but I can't remember actually. I mean, this is 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So, sorry for that.
Do you remember your times, your sort of the time range that you used to have in Olympic distance races?
About 2 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, so you took your break. When did you get back into triathlon?
Well, that was when I turned 40. So that would be 10 years ago. Because when I turned 40, my wife, Åsa, she gave me a slot for the Ironman Kalmar, because she knew that I somewhere nurtured this dream of completing the Ironman distance. I've never, ever been close to it, but she knew it. So she gave me a slot for Ironman Kalmar 2009 then, and this was in August 2008. So then I took up training again. I brought my bike out again. I had to get new tires. They were kind of dry. And then I started training again, actually. And it when I put the bike on the trainer, I had become so stiff. I couldn't reach the handlebar while I was sitting. So I had to mount, I think they were called Chinelli pins or something like that, on top of the ordinary handlebars, just to be able to hold on to something when I started riding again. And then after a couple of weeks, I was able to reach the handlebars. And after maybe 2 months, I could reach down to the aero bars. And then I got a slipped disc. So then I realized that it wasn't 30 that I had turned, but 40. So I had to start all over again. Yeah, interesting.
In during your break, did you completely let yourself go from like health and training, or did you retain some sort of fitness and healthy lifestyle?
Yeah, I would say I retained a healthy lifestyle. We have that in our family, I would say. But and I did me and my brother, we did some trail runs up in northern Sweden together, just for fun. I did Vasaloppet twice, I think.
Famous cross country skiing race for listeners.
Yes, exactly. So, but no structured training whatsoever. Actually, I was surprised, because when I quit in August 97, then I got so focused on my work and my career. So I thought I would sort of sense the urge of training, but I didn't train for several months actually. And afterwards, I think it was because I had the stress, instead of having the stress from training, I had it from the workload, maybe combined with becoming a father for the first time. So that was an interesting experience.
It makes sense.
The stress levels were constant, just with new sources, sort of. Hmm?
Yeah, and in many ways, like even physiologically, we know now from research that stress of any source really affects the body physiologically the same way, whether it's from sport or from work or from being a father.
Yeah, et cetera. Exactly. So, which is quite good to know and understand now when I took up training again.
Yeah. So the Ironman Kalmar, how did it go?
It went well. I remember several times during the race, I was asking myself, why am I doing this and how am I supposed to finish this? I had never run a marathon before that. I still haven't run a marathon before without biking 180k as a warm up. But somehow I managed. I got through it, and actually afterwards I understood it was a good finishing time for a first timer. I had 9:38, I think. So then after finishing, instead of asking myself how can I finish this, I started asking myself how fast can I finish a race like this. So then I started to raise my goals, so to speak. Yeah.
So let's fast forward and pick out a few highlights along the way. What has happened in the 10 years years since Kalmar and up until now?
Okay, so for 2011, I set up a mantra that I wanted to finish sub 9, top 10 in Kalmar. So I wanted to go under 9 hours and finish top 10 because then it was the Swedish Championships. And I actually got very inspired by a guy who, on the year before, Antti Antonov, he's 3 years older than me, and in 2010, he finished second or third in the Swedish Championships. And that was sort of a mental breakthrough for me, seeing him entering the podium at that age. And from then on, I've understood that, okay, age shouldn't be a limiter in this case. So then I wanted to do sub 9, and I managed to do it, 8:57. I did in 2011, as I said. And then I went on to Frankfurt to do the European Championships the year after. Was able to qualify for Kona, so I raced Kona 12. And then in Frankfurt, I saw the guys on the podium get a big Ironman M, and I said to myself, because I finished fourth in my age group, so I said, well, I want one of these for the next year. And then in Kona, I could see the top five get an Umeke on the award ceremony. I thought it was awesome, so I decided I would like to try to get one of these as well. So for 2013, that was the year I was turning 45. So I had a mantra that said, like, fit for fight at 45 and trained to qualify for Kona again, and did so. Was able to win my age group in Frankfurt and then finishing fourth in Kona. So I got my Umeke and was very, very happy with that. And then after that, I had a bit of a I wouldn't call it break, but I didn't do an Ironman for a couple of years. I did Roth in 16, and then went back to Kalmar last year.
Mm. And what has your best Ironman time been so far?
That was actually last year in August in Kalmar. It was 8:52.
Mm. Great result, yeah. And in Kona, what time did you do in Kona?
The first,
for example.
Yeah, that's quite interesting, because the first year I did 9:33:09. And then I set out to improve myself. And the year after, I did 9:13:09. So exactly 20 minutes faster.
Big improvement. Yeah, great.
And afterwards, I actually found out that made me, at that time, the second fastest Swedish athlete ever on Kona. There was a guy, Roland Larsson, who had made the sub 9 in late 80s. But otherwise, obviously, I was able to do, for Swedish circumstances, a good performance.
Yeah, fantastic. Mm-hmm. So now this year you have another interesting target. Can you tell us about that?
Yep. Yeah. So since I'm turning 50, I was looking for something inspiring to aim for. So I came up with the podium tour, I call it. So I don't want to focus only on one race, because you can get sick or you can have technical issues or whatever. So I want to have more than one race, and this year I came up with actually five championships that I wanted to race. So it was South Africa Ironman in April, and then the European Championship 70.3 in Helsingør, And then World Championships, long distance, the ITU World Championships in Odense, mid-July. And so those three I've done, and now I've got left is South Africa, the World Championships 70.3, and Kona. And for these, I have the podium tour mantra as inspiration for my training. Yeah.
And the results so far have been what?
Yeah, good, really good, I would say. So I managed to win my age group in South Africa with a good margin. I apparently broke the course record for that age group.
Oh, wow. Congrats.
Thanks. And then I've also won my age group in Elsinore, and in Odense I had a bad day, but a good performance, I would say. So I'm very happy with my performance. And I finished second with the Mikael Krüger, the Danish guy, has 7 minutes. He was way ahead of me, 7 minutes ahead of me or something like that. So he was the star for the day. But I'm very satisfied with how I pushed through, even though I didn't feel very strong that day.
And with all of these accomplishments, listeners might think that you're superhuman or you just train a whole lot, but that's not really the case, is it? So tell us about your training.
Yeah, I've never been a big volume guy when it comes to training. I believe more in being consistent and also having a clear purpose of every session. So I mean, when I did, actually, if you go back 3 years, when I did Roth 2016, then I averaged, I counted that afterwards, between 6 to 8 hours a week of training, and I did 9:16 in Roth, I think. And last year when I did a new PB in Kalmar, I trained between 8 to 10 hours a week. And this year now, I've made a couple of changes. I've got a coach for the first time. Up till last November, I've been self-coached. But now, in order to challenge my way of training and get some new inspiration for this podium tour, I've got a coach, Oskar Olsson. I've hired him to help me out with this. And we have decided to raise the volume a little bit. So now I would say I average 10 to 12 hours usually in a normal training week.
So can you give an example of what a normal training week might look like for you now this year?
Well, the baseline is sort of if I could get in the water 3 times a week, if I could run 3 times a week, and if I could bike 3 times a week, that's good. And I need strength training, definitely, 2 to 3 times a week. And then when life comes in, then I have to adjust, of course, but then I'm careful not to always select the same session. So if I missed a swimming session 1 week, then I try to miss a run session next week, if that's the case, that I have to cancel one or two sessions.
Yeah.
And it's a bit, I mean, it's a mixture of what we have added is primarily long, slow distance training. So zone 2 trail runs or zone 2 bike rides or even the swimming. Actually, I've increased. Usually, a long session for me up till November was 2.5Ks or 3Ks. I usually wanted to have one 4K swim before an Ironman just to prove to myself that I was capable of it. But now I can have, this week I think I have three sessions that are plus 3Ks. So that's an increase as well, yeah, in volume for me.
So can you go into a bit more detail on the different workout types that you have? Like if you lay out what sorts of runs you have, what sorts of bikes and the swims as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, since I'm not that young, I would say a success factor for me the biggest success for is actually strength training. Since I added strength training, I think it was 2 years ago. There are several reasons for that in my age, and I think it really helps me out. So I prioritize strength training.
And what sort of strength training are you doing?
Basic. Actually, I'm not sure of the terminology in English, but I mean, maybe you can translate.
Yeah.
Knäböj, marklyft,
squats and
BM press,
squats and deadlifts, exactly. And leg yeah. press. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the main and core.
Yeah.
Core. So as long as I do that, I'm fine. And I do few reps and heavy sessions, 4 to 6 reps.
Yeah.
And I could see during the winter really how my strength was built up, which I really sense makes me a better runner and a better biker. Hmm.
Yeah, I don't know if you've listened to the podcast before, actually, but that's something that we talked quite a lot about, strength training and its importance, and doing yeah. exactly the way you do it, like having those sorts of low rep, high weight
exactly. yeah.
workouts, and also the importance of core training.
Yeah, I've listened to it, and I really sense that I got my beliefs got confirmed. I mean, it's not my own ideas, of course. I've got it from other sources also. But I think it's vital.
So go on with
and swim and the swim training. There I have a coach, Anna Corin, who is. I think you have also the Swim Smooth founder, and she's a Swim Smooth coach, and she's been an Olympic swimmer for Sweden, and she's also she used to be a teacher, so she's so fantastic in her pedagogics, and she really challenges us in the squad and helps us to develop to not just to be swimmers but to be swimmers in triathlon with red mist sessions, and she hunts us with our homework that we should do the sessions on our own as well, and that has built up my ability. I'm not getting faster, but I can sustain the same speed. So now when I swam in South Africa in April, I think I swam at 54 or 55 minutes. I've done that before, actually. But the big difference was that I knew when I went into the water that this is going to be fairly easy. This is a 4K, not even a 4K swim. It's a 3.8K swim, and I can handle that. I know I will feel fresh when I get out of the water. So that's, of course, did do a great for my self-confidence in the situation. So it's technique drills and red mist sessions, I would say, is key for me, at least for me. And I think that translates for quite a few age groupers.
Yeah. Mm. And I think that's for, as you said, we had Paul Newsom on from Swim Smooth, so
yeah,
probably undercutting follows a similar protocol. So Paul, in his episodes, he laid out the exact typical swim training structure that he has in his squad. So for those listeners that are interested in those details, go and listen to that. It's great.
They should really do that. I can really recommend it. Yeah, definitely. Mm.
Okay, so the bike then. What did you do on the bike?
On the bike, it's strength sessions during winter, and also those long sessions, easy long sessions. I would say to build me up. I will never be a power biker, but once again, to be able to sustain a solid effort during a race, so it could be 2, 3. Even 4 hours of easy sessions, and as a race approaches, of course, then we will add on race pace intervals on this session. So maybe an hour or two easy, and then 4 by 20 minutes on race pace.
In a week, when you have, let's say, you do 3 bike sessions, like how long are the bike sessions that you do? You do maybe 1 or 2 in the during weekdays and 1 or 2 in the weekend. So how long would those different sessions be?
The weekend sessions would be between 2 to 4 hours. During the week, it could be from 20 minutes up to 90 minutes, I would say.
Okay. And for those listeners that are not familiar with the concept of a strength workouts on the bike, can you describe or give some examples of
I mean, working with cadence and lower cadence, so we could go down to 60, 50, even 40 cadence on a steady effort, just to push, and remain that power that I'm supposed to keep. So it's sort of a specific strength training on the bike.
Yeah. I think. On the trainer, that's the way to do it in where you live. Where, as far as I know, there aren't a lot of very long sustained hills that you can.
No, exactly. So, and also, I mean, with the climate we have here, I was preparing for South Africa during winter, so I did these 3-4 hour sessions indoors, which is also mentally a good training, I would say.
Do you have any tips for, like, some athletes might have struggled to get on the bike because they think it's so boring? How do you, during winter when you're stuck on the trainer, especially if you have a long ride, like how do you manage to do that?
I get back to my podium tour mantra. I make sure I know why I do a session. Why in the long term? So why would I like to do this? And for me this year, it's the podium tour. And then the why in the short term is, of course, the purpose of the session. But the question you ask now is more, how can I cope with sitting indoors on the bike for 3 hours? Yes, it's because I want to race in South Africa and I want to have a good performance. So then I better sit here. And that actually helps me a lot.
Yeah, well, that's...
Sounds simple, but...
It's a true athlete's answer.
Okay.
I like it.
Okay. Good.
So, and the run then, finally, what sort of workouts do you do in a typical week?
Yeah, I would say at least one longer session. And I want to do that as often as possible in trail, because I got Achilles problems. I've had that for many years. So when I do trail running, it helps me to avoid getting those problems back.
And how long is that long run?
Up to 2 hours.
Okay.
Really slow, good music, and out in a nice environment, and just easy run. And then, of course, one session that could be interval session or shorter with a little bit of speed. And then often one session is where we combine bike and run. So it's a duathlon session. So I could go for 20 minutes threshold biking over to 10 minutes threshold running, a short break, and do that 2 or 3 times.
Yeah.
So that gives me one bike and one run session in one session.
Do you do that on outside when the weather allows, or do you do it on the trainer and then go outside inside and run, or do you do everything inside?
Mostly, I try to join Oscar at his training center once a week, because I do 90-95% of my training alone. So I try to get that in my schedule to make it. And then we will do that inside, biking and running.
Yeah. And and the fast intervals that you might do, what sort of intensities are they? Are they like really fast VO2 max zone 5 intervals, or are they threshold, or do you vary it? Can you give some examples of what you might do?
Yeah, that could be. I mean, in the winter when it's a couple of months before race season, I would do VO2 max. So I could, I mean, we could have 30 seconds at the 3 minute pace, for instance, on the treadmill, or building up. I think we had some sessions on 250 speed, just to try it. Very short then, of course. And then as the race season approaches, the intensity would go down, and the time will be prolonged. So 3, 4, 5 minute intervals on more threshold, and then sub threshold, actually more of over to race pace.
Yeah. So this. Adds up to 10 to 12 hours, as you said, and you are still one of the best in the world in your age group. So why do you think this works? Because we hear so much about athletes that train 15, 20, even more hours per week, and you do it on almost half the time, and it's successful for you. Do you have any theory as for why this works?
One answer is, of course, I guess it's genetics. But besides that, I would say, how can they still perform with that training volume? I'm amazed, actually, because it's hard to fit in 10 to 12 hours of training, but I also have to fit in to keep the balance, more recovery. So if I have a 10 to 12 hour training week, I need my power naps almost daily. I need to sleep at least 8 hours per night. I need more time to get my snacks in between. And an ordinary lunch takes longer time because I have to eat more. So I think one answer to why at least some athletes, they train almost as a pro, but they are not able to also recover as a pro or have a nutrition scheme as a pro. And then the balance is lost. And if you haven't got the balance, then you won't perform. So when I say, let's increase my training volume, I simultaneously tell myself, so then I will have to increase my recovery volume. I have to increase my nutrition. And keeping track of that balance, I think it's crucial, at least for me. And I think once again, it translates to quite a few. I've seen quite a few athletes that, I mean, they copy the schemes for pro athletes. And then, but they swim in the morning between 5:30 and 7 o'clock in the morning. And then when the pro athlete goes home, have a second breakfast and goes to rest, they will go to work. And then they will have this, as we mentioned in the beginning, this stress from the workload all over the day, and then go home and have a second, for instance, a run session. And I simply think at least some bodies don't cope with that.
Yeah, I would agree that for most people with families and with work, it just becomes too much. And the few that can handle it, they are blessed with great genetics probably, so to allow them to handle that. Yeah. So, but that doesn't mean that just because some age groupers are successful, that it applies to anybody listening. And you found the balance that works for you, and this is the balance that allows you to get the most potential performance out of your body, and that's
great. Because I imagine that I mean, we know that if I train more, I will have increased fitness, but I don't know when I pass the optimum level, because everybody understands that if I would train 40 hours a week, I would become injured. So between where I am now and 40 hours a week, there is an optimum. But I don't know where that is. So I've decided I rather be a couple of hours on this side of that optimum than on the other side of that optimum.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Absolutely. It's the old adage of it's better to arrive at the starting line slightly overweight and undertrained than slightly overtrained and underweight.
Good. Yeah, I haven't heard that, but that's a good one. Yeah. Exactly.
So another question is, at 49, soon to be 50, you already mentioned strength training as one absolute key factor, but are there any other things that you've maybe changed in your training or learned with time that allows you to stay fast and stay healthy as you age?
I mean, the recovery time is so much longer. I would say it's significant. When I was in the 20s, I could have a hard run or a hard bike session or whatever, and the next day I could go out and have a great session again. Now I have to be more aware of how can I actually cope with this session that is on my schedule, or so I frequently misses sessions because I sense I can actually I won't be able to perform this training session as it's meant to be, and then I rather skip it and have a better session next time.
Sense. So do you try to schedule, or with your coach, do you try to have only hard workouts every other day or something, to always have an easy day in between, or How do you work it into your program?
Exactly. So there are a lot of easy sessions in between, and only a few harder workouts. And then, of course, it's up to me sometimes I've heard people say, no, my coach has overtrained me almost, but that's not the coach's responsibility. As an athlete, I will have to take the schedule from my coach and then adapt it to my situation, because he or she can't know how my complete life situation is. So then I will adjust it
Great. Mm-hmm. And so starting to wrap things up, but general tips for age groupers that want to get faster at any distance, but for you, you've been focusing on the longer distances and the Ironman distance a lot. Yeah. Do you have any general tips that you would give the listeners?
Well, one is keep it simple. I would say my schedule now is more advanced, but that's because I've asked Oscar to do it, and he is an educated coach, and he knows what he does. But when I was self-coached, I kept it very simple. I mean, a 10 by 100 meters swim sessions starting at 1:30, 1:40 was a great session. That is what I would do 3 out of 4 sessions, actually, when I was self-coached. So because I think it's we have the knowing of a lot, but if I can't transfer that into doing, it's very hard to utilize my knowledge. I mean, I really like your approach with the scientific triathlon, but as an athlete, I won't gain. I mean, the marginal gains for knowing very specific, complex training sessions and details, if I can't transfer that into my session and actually do it the right way, then the gain is lost. So try to keep it simple and remind yourself of what's the purpose of this session I'm supposed to do right now. That would be one. And then
can I cut in here? Because you bring up a point there on scientific triathlon, and that's something that sometimes gets misunderstood, actually, which is understandable because I chose it as a brand name. But I talked about in one episode in particular, I talked about the three legs, a three-legged stool, basically, upon which you should base your training, which is the scientific knowledge, but then also the coach's experience, which can be completely anecdotal, and the athlete's own experience. So this assumes that you have a coach-athlete relationship, of course. But if you are a self-coached athlete, then it might be anecdotal experience from people that you talk with or coaches that you read their blogs and listen to their podcasts, and then your own experience. So I would never recommend that anybody go and try to completely make a completely scientific training program, because science is so far behind what coaches are actually doing in the real world. People, researchers design studies to find out why some coaches are successful with certain protocols to really find out what works, but they are behind the coaches that actually find out in the field what is working. And they might not know why it's working, but that doesn't matter because it is working. So I think that, and that's also with this podcast why I want to interview a lot of coaches and also now a lot of age groupers to bring out that anecdotal experience. It doesn't have to be scientific all the time, but having the knowledge of that can give an extra edge. But yes, I totally agree. For self-coached athletes, don't get lost in the weeds. Keep it simple, because I see too many athletes that spend way too much time planning their training, but then lose time actually doing their training, and they're already time crunched. Yeah. So that's no good.
Exactly. No, exactly. Well put, I would say. So, I keep it simple, and then consistency. And by keeping it simple, it's easier to be consistent, because I know I don't have too much. I don't need too much to prepare, because I know what to do when I get up on the bike or whatever the session is. So, this balance between training, recovery, and nutrition. I think everybody should ask themselves: Am I actually aware of the balance in this case, so that I increase or decrease all three parts equally, or at least sure.
And put another way, this question might have the same answer to some extent, but what do you think are some of the most common or most costly mistakes that age groupers make?
Maybe a bit of the same answer, making it too complex. But also, actually, to introduce something new, maybe there are some that they think that they have decided for a goal or for an objective, but they haven't actually made a true decision, so they're not actually really focused and prepared to do the choices that are needed to reach that objective. So, I mean, they have very inspiring and ambitious plans, but they haven't actually thought it through with what it will take in terms of time and effort. And then they get disappointed. And then they lag behind. And that's why I once maybe go back to it's better to have a plan over 8 to 10 hours a week and being able to pull it through than having a plan for 12 to 15 hours a week and always being behind, because I think that creates a mental stress as well. I'd rather be top of my training, a little bit ahead of my training schedule, even though the actual amount of training would be exactly the same in the two different cases. Yeah. So bringing in the mental aspects of training and racing.
That's a great point. And one thing that I noticed, some of my ambitious athletes sometimes ask me for more training, but I know and I've seen in the past when we tried that they can't get everything done. So I say, no, it's better that you stay on top of your training. Yeah. Another reason, in addition to the ones you mentioned, is that we don't know if we put too much training, we don't know which workouts might be missed due to not enough time. And I don't want the key workouts to be missed workouts. So it's better to have a small enough training volume that we make sure that they can get all the workouts in, including the key workouts. Because if you have too much and then it ends up being the wrong workouts that get missed, then that's a much worse training week, even though the volume is the same as in the first case. But in the first case, you got in your key workouts well. So that's something to add to that as well.
Yeah, and then maybe it would be great if I could at least inspire some of these fellow athletes to. I mean, I did 8:52 last year with the training volume between 8 to 10 hours. So at least it doesn't prove. Well, it does prove that it is possible. It's anecdotal, but it proves that you can't say I have to train 15 hours a week in order to be able to push off a sub-9 or a sub-10 Ironman. No, you don't. That's not true. So maybe you should look for your way of training somewhere else instead of this 15 hours training weeks. I'm impressed. I don't understand how people can cope with 15 to 20 hours of training in at this age, and then work and family, etc.
But people should also look, I feel, at your history, your athletic history. You started in the 80s and you did triathlon until 1997, you said. Yeah. That's a long time, even though you didn't have massive training volume, but you were consistent, you accumulated a lot of training hours. Yeah. And now you've done it since 2008 or 9, 2008. Yeah. So you've, again, over this 10-year period, you've accumulated a lot of training hours by being consistent with those 8-hour weeks or whatever it is on average, and just getting things done over a long time period. And people are very impatient, but that's like one of the main keys. You will improve if you're consistent over a long time period. Yeah. It's not possible to get 3 years of improvement in 1 year by tripling the training volume. It just doesn't work like that.
No, it doesn't. Good point.
Yeah. So final question before the rapid fire questions. Mm-hmm. What time management tips do you have to age group triathletes?
An easy answer is to get a kicker or something like that, because it makes it so easy to get a good bike session, which usually is the most time consuming for many athletes, at least, to just jump on the bike on the kicker and pull off a good 2 hour, 3 hour, or at least 1 hour, or even 20 minute session. I mean, if I don't have much time, I have half an hour, I can do a great session in 20 minutes and then get a shower and be done in 30 minutes.
That's an indoor trainer brand or Wahoo kicker for those people that are not familiar.
True.
Okay, great. Anything else?
And then once again, this being very clear, am I actually prepared and willing to choose to train to the level I've said? Because that means that I have to choose not to do a lot of other nice things. I never watch TV. I can't hang around with my family as much as I would have liked to, but it's a conscious choice. So I choose to go for last evening. My one daughter came back from a trip in Nice, and the other daughter came back from another trip, and we met for the whole family for the first time in at least a week. And then we had a dinner together, but I didn't sit for very long because I went to the gym because I had a weight session to do. And when I got back, they were all asleep. So, yeah, but I wanted to do that. That's the way of managing time, is to being aware, what do I choose to do, and feeling satisfied with that, feeling content with my choices.
So let's start to wrap this up with the rapid fire questions and answer these in one sentence or less, at most 15 seconds. And the first question is, what's your favorite book, blog, or resource related to triathlon?
I would say Fad Free Management. It's not a book on triathlon specifically. It's a book on management that I got from my father when I became a line manager for the first time, actually in 1997, because that has learned me a lot in terms of leading myself and others. Getting a very inspiring vision. Why should I do this? Leading, getting real. What's the reality? Do I actually have 2 hours? No, I don't. So get real. I have 30 minutes. Good. Do something with those 30 minutes. So it's more of a management book, but I love it.
Yeah, good. And what's a personal habit that's helped you achieve success?
Power naps. Power naps and protein. I would say, yeah.
Good combo. Yeah. And what's a productivity or time management tip in addition to the ones that you mentioned? If you can give a very short one that you can share with the listeners.
Now I fall back to the kick, but I didn't mention that. Then maybe. Oh, okay. Always have bags ready. Always have a swim, a run, and a bike, and a weightlift or strength training bag in my trunk, in my car.
Good one.
So when I get the opportunity, I will have a session.
Yeah, perfect. All right, Kalle, this has been really, really enjoyable to talk with you and get to learn a little bit more about how you train and how you manage to be incredibly fast and successful on this type of training, and get some insights into that, and hopefully very inspirational and informational for the listeners as well. So thank you very much.
Oh, pleasure. My pleasure, really. Thanks, Michael.
All right, so I hope that you enjoyed that episode a lot as much as I enjoyed talking to Carla. I think it was incredible. A few key takeaways: make the training count, make the most out of your time. And that's true whether you have 5 hours or 25. But if you are on the lower volume side of things, it is even more important, of course. And for many age group athletes, it's just a reality that you don't have any more than those 8 to 10 hours to train. Don't let that deter you. As you can see, it is entirely possible to do incredible results on this volume if you use it right. And that's, I guess, one of the main reasons that you're listening to this podcast, that you're actually interested in using your training volume right. So kudos for that. My second takeaway is that consistency over many, many years does count. If you take the entire winter off every year, or even just a month or two off, and hope to still have a progression like Carl, then it becomes much more unlikely. But if you start putting in those 8-hour weeks right now, and you do that consistently, you can go very, very far if you do that very, very consistently for 4 years, for 6 years, for 8 years, for 10 years. Endurance sports is a game of patience, and you can keep improving for a long time. It's not something that you really need to be super young for or anything, as Carl is proof of. And that is my third takeaway, actually. Age is not a reason to slow down. Carl was the 5th Swede overall last year in Ironman Kalmar with a time of 8:52, which was a personal best at the age of 48. So there's some motivation for all the Masters athletes listening. As usual, you can find the show notes for this episode on thattriathlonshow.com, or go directly to the show notes from the episode description. It's linked to, and you can leave comments or questions in the comment section at the bottom of that page. Finally, I wanted to say a big, 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 big thank you to everybody who has been rating and reviewing That Triathlon Show on iTunes. I can't tell you just how much I appreciate it. It means really a lot to me. As of this recording, this podcast has 102 ratings in the United States, 99 of which are 5 stars, and 49 ratings in the United Kingdom. iTunes works in that it has different... You can't access all the reviews from iTunes in general. You have to go to a specific country store. Anyway, 48 of those 49 UK reviews are 5-star reviews. So I'm really amazed by the fact that so many people internationally on all continents have found the podcast from a random rambling Finn working in the very, very small markets of Finland and Portugal as my base anyway, even though, of course, it's international these days. But it truly amazes me, and I'm very, very grateful for it. And just so you're aware, I do read every single review. I get emails every month with all the new reviews coming in. So if you're in the Philippines, if you're in Brazil, Canada, Australia, Sweden, Finland, Portugal, the United Arab Emirates, or wherever, I have read your review, and I'm super grateful for it. And I want to actually take the opportunity to read one of my favorite reviews that came in recently, very recently, from Sawyer1206 in the United States. He writes, it's 5 stars, and he writes, I found Michael's podcast through an iTunes search when he was on episode number 3, and I've been with him ever since. I did recently find myself searching for more podcasts with the same content and format, but came up short. Sure, there are lots of great triathlon podcasts out there, but I found most of them have lots of unrelated chatter. That's one of the things I loved the most about That Triathlon Show. Great content without the chatter. I found myself going back to the beginning and listening to every show again instead of trying to find a replacement. Keep up the good work. Hashtag fans in Texas. Thank you so much, Sawyer. That Sawyer1206. That is truly amazing. And this is what I've been trying to do, and the reason that I started this podcast. I wanted this sort of content, and I'm glad that so many listeners are finding it useful. I do see that me asking for reviews now and spending 3 or 4 minutes on it, in a way, is chatter. So sorry about that. I try not to do it every show, and I will wrap it up very shortly. But it is incredibly important for the podcast to keep growing. And the way it works is by getting more ratings and reviews. It's simple as that. Of course, word of mouth as well. So that also helps. So if you, like Sawyer1206, have been with me for a long time, please go and rate and review on iTunes. Whether you're an iPhone user or not, you can download iTunes on your desktop and quickly create an account and rate and review. And that is an incredibly big help to me to help keep growing the podcast. And this in turn helps me attract the best guests, and it helps me warrant spending as much time as I do to create these episodes. And another way that you can help is to shop from our sponsors using the special promo codes to show them that you are listening to the show and you are finding them through the show. So first we have Roka, of course, on roka.com, roka.com. If you're looking for triathlon apparel like wetsuits, swimskins, buoyancy shorts, etc., sunglasses, goggles, you can find it on Roka, and it's best in class. And you can get 20% off your entire order when you use the promo code THATTRIATHLONSHOW, all one word, all caps. And Precision Hydration, they provide electrolytes to help you get hydrated and stay hydrated, keep you performing, keep you from cramping. They help you with both their electrolyte products that you can get for 20% off for 5 more days within the month of August using the promo code TTS20, and through the incredible hydration advice they have on their blog. So go and check that out if you want, you need more information about hydration. Thank you, as always, for listening. Keep training smart and keep loving triathlon.